You're listening to the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper.
I'm Carolyn Nelson.
And tonight, folks, I want to make sure that you're ready for what we're going to do here. I think you were all expecting to hear an Alex Loglia tape on AIDS tonight. Not eggs, AIDS. We're not going to do that. Because of a few things that I've experienced in the last few days, and a couple of phone calls from people that I've received, it is necessary, I believe, for us to talk about something else. The music that you're going to hear tonight is Prologue, The Early Days, Quaviet River, Vietnam, 1968, and Homecoming. All original music composed and conducted by John Williams, and taken from the major motion picture Born on the 4th of July. Tonight, folks, I want to talk about Vietnam and Vietnam veterans, what they've been going through, what some of them are still going through, some of the reasons for it that many people, sometimes even the veterans themselves, don't understand, and what you can do to help these people feel better about themselves and their country, and really come home. Vietnam, ladies and gentlemen, was not a run-of-the-mill war. It was not a war like we had fought at any time before in our history. My generation was a generation that still, when we were young, were able to see real live veterans of the Civil War occasionally march in a Veterans Day parade. We knew our uncles and grandfathers and fathers had fought in World War I, World War II, and Korea, and many of them were real heroes. And we loved them, and we watched them, and we envied them, and they told us stories when they felt like talking, and they made war sound somehow glorious and wonderful. A place where a man could prove himself. And all the doubts and the wonderment of the childhood years could finally be congealed and something would walk forth called a man. So many of us look forward to what we called our war. Women may not understand some of the things that I'm going to talk about tonight, unless they served in Vietnam, and I know many women did. I don't know if any are listening to this broadcast. Men, when I was growing up, were raised totally different than women. Boys and girls did not play with the same toys, were not expected to grow up to occupy the same professions. And I'm not going to get into whether that was right or wrong. It just was. It just was, folks. And me being a child, I never questioned it. It just was the way that it was. I was taught to feel things in a certain way. I was taught not to cry or show my emotions, and that if I did, it was a bad thing. It was a sign of weakness. I was taught that my country was the greatest country in the world, could do no wrong, and that every man was expected, ultimately, to at some time or another serve his country. All of us, even the people who protested the war and refused to go, even the ones who went to Canada and stayed to escape the war, even those who dodged the draft, have always had some conflict with this war and with what they did. The veteran and the draft dodger alike, it made no difference. I've spoken to many people who went to Canada and have since come back and become good, upstanding citizens, been forgiven, have served their public service or whatever they were required to do. And sometimes late at night, deep in conversation, when everyone else has gone to bed, they've confided in me that they've always wondered if they did the right thing. And because they didn't go in harm's way, they've always really wondered down deep inside to this very day if they are or are not a coward. Somehow, in our childhood, this becomes a great issue with boys and then men. And sometimes there's a reckoning in every boy's life where he either confronts the fact that he is a coward and goes on and lives his life, or that he's able to stand in harm's way and take whatever comes and demonstrate whatever courage he can muster up inside himself. And those few march forth extremely confident inside, with the feeling that at last they have become a man. Now, don't get confused, folks. I've grown up a lot over the years, and I know that that is something to do with being a human being, being able to stand up against adversity and do what you know is right. It makes no difference whether you're a man or a woman, a child, or an elderly person walking down a lonely, dark street at night with no lights and no protection. It has very little to do with being a man. I know that a man is all kinds of things. That a lot of things that I thought were only expected of men today are also expected of women. And I know that ultimately, there will always be a biological difference, and I sincerely believe a difference in the way men and women think. But ultimately, I believe that we will share in the same tasks and the same conquests and the same jobs and the same ability or inability to create a future that we all want for our children and grandchildren. And that's important that we all understand that, because regardless of what many people may think or feel, events march onward, never backward. Whatever the past was, it will not be again. And many people are having problems dealing with that fact. We are on the verge of great, tremendous change. The only thing that we know in this world that is absolutely certain is that the world will change. Things will change, people will change, cities will change, countries will change, technology will change. The way we live our lives may change. But what was cannot be. Understand that. And that's one of the biggest problems with those of us who fought in Vietnam. That is the biggest problem with those who have not come to grips with what they did or did not do in Vietnam. You see, because some of the problem with some of the Vietnam veterans, even though they may claim tremendous combat experience, is the fact that they went and never faced the enemy. And they cannot face that within themselves, even though it wasn't their fault. There are those of us who underwent extensive, terrible, terrifying combat experiences. And many of us have had to deal with what we did or did not do under those circumstances. And some of us have not come to grips with that yet. But that's not the biggest problem that all of us faced, ladies and gentlemen. It was the strangest war ever fought by this country, in that almost everyone who went was a volunteer, despite what you've been told, despite all the propaganda about the Vietnam War. All of the military services asked for volunteers and sent them first. And almost every single person that I met in Vietnam, whether he was Army, Air Force, Navy, or Marine, was a volunteer. This myth that this great draft took place across the country, and unwilling young men were scooped up in this net and sent to Vietnam to die, is a lie. It is a lie. Some men were drafted and went against their will. The great majority were volunteers. Because you see, folks, my generation could not wait to fight their war so that they could march in their uniforms in the Veterans Day parade and be heroes just like their fathers, their uncles, their grandfathers, and their great-grandfathers. And if you don't believe that, you dig out the statistics and you look at them, you'll find that it's true. Absolutely true. There was a great number of minorities in Vietnam, simply because that was the easiest way to get out of poverty, to get out of the ghetto, to get out of the inner city, to get your own paycheck, to be a man standing on your own 2 feet, and to go fight your war. This concept that this draft net scooped up great numbers of minorities against their will and sent them off to die in Vietnam is also a lie. Look at the military services before Vietnam, and you'll find it's always been the way out for a lot of young men who were completely disadvantaged, had poor parents or no parents at all, lived in abject, what we call abject poverty in this country. Some third world countries, they would call it very wealthy, indeed. But it was a way out, and many, many took it voluntarily, folks, voluntarily, not against their will at all. And if you think about it, it wasn't that hard to hide from the draft. And not only that, if you refused to take the oath or sign your signature, there was nothing anyone could do to force you into the military service, because the law states no one can force you to sign your signature on anything, nor can they force you to take an oath. And all you people who tried to pretend that you were gay or that you were sick or had some strange tropical disease in order to escape the draft. You were so stupid, you didn't even know that all you got to do is refuse to take the oath, and no one can force you to go into the military service. For without taking the oath, you cannot be abducted, and no one can force you to take any oath, period, ever in your life in this country. Nor can they force you to sign your signature, which you must do to validate a contract. How does that make you feel, dummies? You know, when I went in to take my oath, I didn't see anyone refuse to take it. I took it gladly, voluntarily. Everyone that I ever met in the United States Navy, the United States Marines, were volunteers. In Vietnam, I met some people who were in the United States Army who had been drafted and did not want to be there, but no one else. No one else. Period. What was wrong with the Vietnam War? Well, in the first place, they dehumanized all of the people, even those who we were supposed to be fighting for. For we all had to attend briefings and little classes and schools and things before we went, and we were taught that these people were not human. They were slopes, gooks, geeks, and a lot of other names. We were taught that the Viet Cong should be called Charlie, and the North Vietnamese Army we dubbed the NVA. And we had nicknames for specific units that we habitually fought, or habitually looked for and never fought. One of the major discrepancies was that a young man would be sent to Vietnam attached to a unit. At first he was sort of a pariah. No one wants to go into battle with a greenhorn, with a new guy, with somebody who's never had combat experience before, and you certainly didn't want them near you because they might get you killed. And then, if you survived that period of time, you progressed into one of the regular crew members, as it was in my unit. You weren't an outcast anymore. You found people began to accept you. And then pretty soon, as time went by, you found that you were the veteran or the old guy. And all the new guys looked up to you and were a little bit afraid of you. And you were the one that they came to for advice. And here you were, belonging with a group of men that you had come to respect more than any group of people that you had ever belonged to in your entire life. You learned to rely upon them for your very life, and they upon you for theirs. And you stood side by side against whatever came along. And at one point you began to realize in Vietnam that we were not supposed to win, for they had rules that guaranteed it. On the river that I patrolled, on a certain part of the river, no matter what happened, we could not return fire on either bank or from a boat on the river if we were taken under fire. If we went a little farther upriver, we could not fire up on the south bank no matter what happened or no matter what kind of fire came at us, no matter how terrible the ambush. We were not supposed to fire up on the south bank. However, the north bank was a free fire zone. We could fire. Not only could fire, but were expected to fire and destroy anything living that moved or breathed or crawled or dug in the earth. Didn't matter what it was. And then as we went up farther, we found gray areas where no one really knew what to do, where there was an unofficial village of boats, boat people just pulled their boats up on a sandbar, and that's where they lived, and it became a boat city. Right in the middle of a war, which had no legal standing and no illegal standing, and the enemy frequently would fire at us from positions such as this. And it became a great moral dilemma with those of us who were in command situations, as I was, the captain of a patrol boat on a river, in the middle of the night when you couldn't see. Later, we were lucky and got large starlight scopes, tripod mounted. And then we could see, but everything was the same color, green, and it was difficult to distinguish what was what, but eventually we learned. After killing not a few water buffalo, I cannot describe to you exactly what it feels like to walk in a jungle because I never did it. But I can tell you what it was like to be on a river, on a boat, in full view, with an assigned area that you cannot leave, under very strict orders, with orders that you can fire in certain places and cannot fire in others, and you look around and you see a crew of young boys, really, and you realize that you're really still a boy, quickly becoming a man, and you realize that every single man on that boat relies upon you to make the proper decisions at the proper time for their very lives. And then I came to realize that I relied on each one of them being able to carry out any order that I would give them, or being able to stand at their weapon, no matter what type of fire was directed at us, or how bad someone else may be hit, but to stand at that weapon, and to service and deploy that weapon and to fire upon the enemy, no matter what. And it was my job to maneuver the vessel in such a way, tactically, to prevent as many casualties as possible. And then all of a sudden, in the midst of this, a piece of paper comes that says, you've got to go to Tan Sanuk Airport in Saigon and leave the country because your tour of duty is over. And this is what many Americans have never, ever understood. The tremendous conflicts that order creates in a young man who has finally become a part of the most important organization that he's ever belonged to, with a group of men that he respects and loves more than any other group of men that he has ever, ever met or been with in his life. And he has lived literally on the very edge of death, walking on the razor blade on a daily basis, knowing that the next step could be his last, or the next moment, an eternity, the very end of his earthly existence. And he knows, finally, for the first time in his life, what life is really all about, what it really means. And so that unit and that river and that boat and that conflict become overwhelmingly the entire focus of everything that has ever come to bear upon that young man. And it becomes his very existence. And now he's told he has to leave. This never happened in other wars, ladies and gentlemen, so it didn't have the effect that it had on Vietnam veterans. When people went to fight in wars for this country in the past, they joined a unit, they stayed with that unit, they fought with that unit until the war was over, or they were wounded, or they were dead. And only then did they come home. But in Vietnam, every year, everybody turned over. Everybody turned over, except some experienced non-commissioned personnel who were the only ones who really knew their job. And in some instances, they were kept over for another year or 3 years. And I've even known a couple of guys who were there for 4. But these were the exception and not the rule. And then there were some psychotic people who had the chance to go home and refused it. And they may have been the smartest ones of all. For by and large, those people did not experience the hurt and the confusion and the doubts and the feeling that they had abandoned their comrades in the midst of a war. Those who came home came out of the middle of something hazy, like a dream, like a bad dream, that was, in its own way, the best dream that they had ever had, if you can understand that. And they walked out of this place that was indescribable, where men were killing men, and no one really knew why, into what appeared to be literally Disneyland. And some of us were spit upon. And some of us were met at the airport with protesters with signs calling us baby killers. And this just added to the confusion because we didn't understand. We had gone to fight for this country like our fathers and grandfathers and great-grandfathers. We had done our duty. And we were not accepted or welcomed. Some of us retreated to some personal place deep inside and just left this world altogether. Those men to this day are in mental institutions and veterans' hospitals, and some have been committed for the rest of their lives. It's a very small percentage, ladies and gentlemen, so don't think that this is the normal case for all Vietnam veterans or even a good percentage. It's a very small percentage. Most of us just tried to get back into society and lead our lives like we felt it should be led. And we'll talk about that right after this break. Hello, folks. This is William Cooper speaking to you now for Swiss America Trading. Many of you have wondered and asked, as I've made my speaking tour around the country, how can I save my assets? What can I do to protect my family against what is sure to come? For if the coinage has been debased and there is nothing backing the dollar, eventually, as the debt begins to pile for the United States of America and exceeds every reasonable limit, we will be called to pay the piper. And when we are, this house of cards called the American economy will come tumbling down, and NAFTA is certain to only escalate that event. For the only way NAFTA will succeed is if there is a leveling. These have moved to the border or into the United States of America because American labor is cheaper than Canadian labor, if you can imagine that. It's true. And so the standard of living of Canada has already become lower. It is coming down toward ours, and with the NAFTA treaty with Mexico, ours will begin to lower to meet the standard of living of the average Mexican laborer. The Mexican standard of living will come up. They will benefit greatly from this. You need to do something to protect what you have now. Read history. Look in the books, folks, and you'll find that there's only one thing that has ever protected anyone in hard times. I would say two things, but in the New World Order, private ownership of land will cease to be a reality. So real estate, the ownership of land, is no longer a consideration. But precious metals have always, in the history of the world, held their value. That is how you can protect your assets. Not go out and make an investment and make $1 million. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about protecting what you already have so that you will not lose the value of your fortune, however small or large it may be. It makes no difference. It's extremely important to whoever it belongs to. Swiss America Trading specializes in precious metals in all of its different forms. We have our own representative there who is just for the listeners of the hour of the time. His name is Gene Miller, and I want you to call him, folks. Call him. Do it. Do it now. Call Gene Miller at 1-800-289-2646. Ask him about non-confiscatable, non-reportable hard assets. Thank Swiss America Trading for sponsoring this program, The Hour of the Time. Mention my name and ask for the free newsletters. Just those newsletters alone are more than worth the phone call, believe me. You are under no obligation, ladies and gentlemen, and it's an 800 number, so you have no excuse for not making this call. 1-800-289-2646. That's 1-800-289-2646. Look around at your loved ones. If you cannot assure them at this very moment that their financial future has been protected, then you must make this call. Do it now. 1-800-289-2646. That's 1-800-289-2646. Folks, you'll be glad that you did. those of us who came home and tried to continue our lives found that the old saying, you can't go back home, is absolutely true. Everything had changed. We didn't know anybody, no matter how many years we had known them, and they didn't know us. We had things on our minds that we wanted to talk about, and yet we did not want to talk about those things, and yet with someone, we must. For some of us, it was many years before we found anyone that we could talk with concerning the war. Some of us, to this day, have never found anyone at all to which they could confide their deepest feelings and experiences, and have borne the tide of battle still raging in their mind, even now. You see them on the grounds of the Veterans Administration hospitals. You see them at Patriot meetings still wearing their greens and their camouflage uniforms, or pieces of those uniforms, or medals on their shirts. You'll see them at the Vietnam Memorial Wall in Washington, D.C., with tears streaming down their faces, wearing bits and pieces or all of old uniforms, medals. You'll see them sometimes in your city on a street corner with a hat on the sidewalk, with a sign saying, I'm a Vietnam veteran. Now, most Vietnam veterans did go on with their life, even though they struggled inside themselves with these things. They still went on and lived their lives. And for those people, those of us who were able to do that, we somehow made peace with the war, or we substituted something else for that war. The biggest problem with those who have not been able to come back all the way, to really come home, they still feel inside themselves that they deserted their comrades. They do not feel anymore that they are living, or that they are alive, or that they have a purpose. They don't really know what it was all about, because they were not allowed to carry it through to an ending. They neither won nor lost. They're in limbo, not knowing what to feel. They know this, though. They remember their fathers and their uncles and their grandfathers and their great-grandfathers. They remember the Veterans Day parades when they were young. They remember the John Wayne movies. And they know that they are supposed to be a part of that, and they are not. They are not. Something has been taken from their very soul, something that was so important. And I keep saying they. You see, one of the things we try to do is shut it off. We is what I should be saying. For I'm a part of all of that. And I am, and always will be, a brother to all of them. Always. The only thing that separates me from most of those who have not been able to recover, to truly come home, and to leave the war behind them where it truly belongs, is that I found my substitute, ladies and gentlemen. I left a river behind, and I found a new one upon which to travel in the middle of the night, and a new crew that depends upon me to guide them and to make the proper decisions. I can remember it was a big thing on my boat for me. After a while, nobody else even paid any attention, but I always did. I never ate one bite of food until all my crew had either eaten or expressed a desire not to eat. It may not mean a lot to many of you, but it meant an awful lot to me. It still does. I'm talking to all of you out there who may still be struggling with that war. I know how you feel because I've had the same feelings. When I left my crew to come back, I tried everything I could try to extend my stay and not have to leave. And I was told that there was no way that I could do it. They'd already decided to turn the war over to the South Vietnamese and that we were leaving. I knew that before the newspapers knew it. So I was not allowed. I felt deep within my very soul that I had abandoned my crew. And alone, sometimes late at night over a bottle of scotch, I cried a lot about that. Struggled with it inside, as I know many of you have, whether or not you had a crew, just being a member of an organization of men that you'd come to love and trust, and then being taken away from them while they were still there doing this terrible job that we all thought we were supposed to be doing. And then coming back and finding out that you were not the hero that your father and grandfather and great-grandfather were. You were an outcast, a baby killer, somebody to be spit upon. Terrible, terrible freak of nature, a Vietnam veteran. For many years, most of us didn't relish walking around telling people that we were Vietnam veterans. It just was not something that would endear you to the community. Now, if it became an important matter, most of us would stand right up and say immediately, yes, I was a Vietnam veteran, and take whatever consequences that would bring. But nobody freely volunteered that knowledge anywhere. Anywhere. And then, what was the outcome of all of this? Did we win? Did we lose? What does all this mean? And then we began to struggle with, were we fools? What the hell were we doing there in the first place? And for many of us, these things have never been resolved. The one thing has to be resolved. You must begin to live your life again. And the only way you can do that, after participating in real combat, for those of you who are struggling with the fact that you were there and really didn't get shot at or shoot at anyone, and I know there are some of you, I don't know how to tell you to deal with your problem, but for combat veterans who fought and lived, who lived on the cutting edge of that razor blade, who went into harm's way on a daily or nightly basis and did whatever was required of them, and then came back, wounded or not, but alive. I know, just as I know within myself, that if you do not find again your own personal river or your own personal jungle to take the place of the turmoil that is raging within you, you will probably never come home. I can't tell you how to find that, but I can tell you that I have found it. I have found it. And I would like for you to look at what I have found, because maybe it can help you. Our country is in danger. This time for real. We were fighting in Vietnam a war that had nothing to do with the United States of America or the Constitution or the Bill of Rights. We have a chance to fight another war, a war that really means something to us and that will have a clear ending. And that war should be in protection of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, a complete rejection of Marxist socialist ideas, and a return to the principles and ideals upon which this country was built. This is my personal river, and it can be yours too, because we have a long, long river to travel. We have many battles to fight, and we are, at this moment, outnumbered. We are out-technologied. We are out-funded. We are out-everything. Let me tell you guys, we need you. We need you to come home, really come home. If you want to ride with me on this boat, I'd love to have you. Because I know that you've been tried and that you're true. And I know that you'll stand at your station and you'll do whatever is required if you will just accept this substitute for the Vietnam War. And realize that this war is much more important than that one ever was. And if you'll understand that the future and the freedom of all that comes after us will depend upon whether or not we win or lose this war, but there will be no limbo. And that, I'm sure you'll agree, is important to all of us. I'd like to hear from some of you. And I'd like to hear if this makes sense to you. It makes sense to me, but it may not make sense to anyone else. If you fought in Vietnam, I'd like to have a call from you right now for the next 10 or 12 minutes. I'd like to hear what you think about what I have just said. The number is 602-333-2174. That's 602-333-2174. And I won't be too disappointed if no one calls, because I know what kind of emotion this brings up. And the reason I did this show was the other night, late at night, everybody had gone to bed. And I don't know, 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, I was sitting there watching the satellite. And all of a sudden, the Vietnam Memorial was right there in front of my face. And all of a sudden, the tears just began to come down my eyes. And the next morning, an old friend called who had fought in Vietnam. And if you understand the synchronicity, maybe that's what happened. He wanted to talk about the way he was feeling about some of the things that I've discussed tonight. And so I sat all day yesterday. I was giving thanks with my family and with Carolyn. I thought an awful lot about Vietnam and about Vietnam veterans and about the state of this country today. And about this river that I am fighting upon today. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hello, this is Mike Orr from Sheridan, Wyoming.
Hi, Mike. I need you to turn off your radio.
Okay. Wow, I got through.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah, I was a Vietnam-era veteran from 1968 to 1971. I got a 3-month cut. And I've heard a lot of stories of, I remember one incident, I was just talking to a veteran today, this evening, who was a door gunner in Vietnam. There's a lot of trauma from that. And we were just exchanging stories about things we heard over there. And I remember talking to an aviation bosun's mate who talked about nuclear devices that were deployed over there, or cubes or something that they dropped. And then just this last summer, I heard through a friend I work with, secondhand information from a Oriental person who is a citizen of the United States during the war, and who was, and is now. And he talked about a device that was like a porcupine. It was a round ball with projections sticking out of it, and they dropped it over a certain section of the jungle. I don't know where it was. and it was an implosion. They went down afterwards to investigate, and all the trees is blowing inwards. So I hear a lot of stories, and another friend of mine who I work with, her family, have had a son in Desert Storm who experienced biological warfare, gas warfare, I believe one of the two, and now it's come to light in Congress, I believe, where they're investigating some of these stories that troops have been exposed to, things like that, where officially it was denied. So,
yeah, a lot of things were denied. How did you feel about my suggestion tonight?
Well, I just turned you on. I was watching a show, and I flipped it off and decided to see what Shortwave had to offer.
Uh-huh. So you just caught the tail end of the program?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I'm glad that you caught us. Is this the first time you've ever listened to the Hour of the Time?
No, I've listened several times over the last few months, and I've seen two of your tapes on JFK's assassination, and the one about a conference you had down in Arizona on the New World Order and UFOs and various other subjects. I'm just interested in I'd like to get a hold of some of your tapes.
Well, write us a letter and ask for our information packet, and we'll sure send it to you. And I want to thank you for calling, and make sure that you catch the program every night.
Okay.
Thank you.
I appreciate what you said about your experience in the Navy as an intelligence officer, and the memos that came over your desk, and I'm still at odds with what the establishment has presented. And there's just too much to it. I've read all the books except Posner's. Posner, I just dismissed because of that.
Posner's full of crap, about 6 feet of it.
Yeah.
Thanks for the call.
Okay, we'll see you later.
Take care.
Thanks, bye.
602-333-2174 is the number, folks. 602-333-2174. Good evening, you're on the air.
Howdy, my name's Bill. I served between 68 and 71 in Southeast Asia. Listened to your program for the first time tonight. Was scanning around on the satellite and picked up a subcarrier. What you got to say makes a lot of sense about the importance of our Constitution and the timeliness of events right now that demands our cooperation, shouldn't we say?
Yes, and I think it demands people who have been through the fire, so to speak.
Well, when I went in, I swore to uphold the Constitution. It's a lifelong obligation.
Uh-huh.
And that's the way it is for all of us. And if we look at our Constitution and what's happened to it in just the past year.
You realize, of course, that we've lost already almost all of the Bill of Rights.
Yeah, I know, and it's scary, you know. And then, you know, what is it? You want to have a 5-day waiting period before you can go to church next? What?
Yeah, you're right on. Things are getting very scary, and they're happening very quickly. It amazes me that most Americans don't even understand that it is happening, and that we have many of our brothers who fought in Vietnam out there still in the Vietnam fog who don't realize that we need them here now. We don't need them in Vietnam.
Well, they've gone to sleep. Right? They stood up for something when we thought it was right to stand up for something, and they come home and got spat upon.
Yes, I'm fully aware.
And you know, you beat a dog so much, he's just going to lay down. So people got to stand up. They got to wake up.
That's correct.
So what do you suggest? How do we get together? How do we organize?
Well, that's the next step. But I think we need to get Vietnam veterans organized and acquainted with what's really happening now and put back on the right track, because not only are they going to wake up sometime in the future realizing that their war is gone and their life was shattered, but now they don't even have a country anymore.
Right, and the thing is, we've got to wake up. And like most of the Vietnam and veterans organizations that have approached me, you know, I shied away because these guys are still living in the past, man.
That's the whole purpose of my program tonight, was to try to make that point clear and to try to, for those of us who are listening, to maybe yank them out of that past into the present. And I don't know if I was successful. I hope that I was, at least for some, but...
You've got me excited because there's somebody else out there thinking the way I am. I'm looking at the news and what the Senate's doing and the Congress is doing. And it's scary. It's a fascism is what's happening.
You're right.
It's subtle. It's slow. It's sneaky.
Yep.
And it's turning around. You know, it's coming up behind us. It's going to bite us on the butt.
Well, it's already chewing. I can feel it. Yeah. I hate to say this, but I'm out of time, my friend. I'm glad that you called. Please don't be a stranger to this show.
When are you on?
We're on at 10 p.m. Mountain Standard Time, 9 Pacific, 11 Central, midnight Eastern, this same station, Monday through Friday night.
Through Friday. Gotcha. Take care.
Thank you for calling.
Thanks.
And for everybody else out there, I hope that this message has really come home to some of you. I hope for many of you it's helped you understand Vietnam veterans a little bit better. And for all of you, from all of us here, good night, and God bless you all.